And you're back. It is the Taylor Report. It is CIUT 89.5 FM. We will be speaking shortly with Rick Sterling. He writes often for Consortium News elsewhere. Just put his name in, Rick Sterling, Sirius Solidarity Network. I was commenting on Gaza at the top of the show. I want to say that I think everyone knows that a Canadian doctor from London, Ontario, Dr. Lubani, was shot on the, I think it was the 16th. And there was a tweet from Chrystia Freeland about this, and she said, "Thank you, Dr. Tariq Lubani, for taking the time to speak to me this morning." This is after he'd been shot. And she says, then follows that with the sentence, "Dr. Lubani was injured Monday in the Gaza Strip. We are doing everything we can to help as well as to determine how a Canadian was injured." So I just wanted to help Chrystia Freeland by saying, actually, he wasn't injured. He was shot by Israeli snipers. But she can do her own research. It's been a few days, and that is still on her tweet. We're joined by Rick Sterling. Are you there, Rick?
Yes, I am, Phil.
Hey, it's good to be talking to you. I saw something that was reported first, I guess, by Vanessa Bealey, 21st Century Wire. I saw it also at Charmaine Narwani, two journalists I respect very, very much. I was very struck by it. It was something, a document from the UK government, and it was about their good deeds in Syria. And it seemed to document their financing and close watch over the activity of a group called the Syria Civil Defense, or Hollywood calls them the White Helmets. If you saw that item, I want to ask your opinion of that. What are your estimate of that matter?
Well, it's a good confirmation of what Vanessa and others of us have been saying for years, that the claims of the White Helmets that they're neutral and independent, fiercely independent, they even said, from government influence, is total hogwash. They're actually a creation of the UK, the US, and a foundation set up by a billionaire in the Middle East. So this is just confirming what we knew all along. The one really interesting element in this is that they talk about the White Helmets as an information source. Now, in the past, of course, they've been portrayed as these volunteers who were rescuing people. But as we've seen over the recent years, increasingly the media in the West relies on them on videos coming from the White Helmets. So they're actually funneling information and supplying videos to the West. And in this report from the UK Foreign Office, they talk about how happy they are that the White Helmets are providing this information, and they try to buttress it by saying that Amnesty International and Human Rights Watch are satisfied with this and consider this reliable, and so they do too. As we know, those who have investigated the issue a lot more carefully, just about everything about the White Helmets is false. They're not volunteers. They're not neutral. They advocate for Western NATO intervention, and so they're basically paid agents. So they're supplying the information and the story that the UK and the US like to hear. Mm-hmm. But this is good documentation that confirming what we've been saying for years.
I urge people to go to the. I found it at a Twitter of. Charmaine Narwani and also the Twitter of Vanessa Bealey, you know, looking at it, particularly at where at Vanessa's, you see the document itself, and it says this many pounds for this work, and this many pounds for that, and then the text that you cited, and actually I have the sentence. It says Human Rights Watch and Amnesty International have stated that SCD are their most routinely reliable source for reporting it. And then they go on to say, throughout their work, they're reporting on the Russian bombing. They specifically say that in the document. SCD has provided essential corroboration that Daesh was not targeted, but moderate opposition entities. This has provided confidence to statements by UK and other international leaders made in condemnation of Russian action. So they got what they paid for.
Exactly, yes. And that kind of lays it out there. So they funded this organization that will...
A trifle naked, you might call it.
Yeah, exactly. And that they keep up the pretense, of course, that this is independent and this is reliable reporting coming from a neutral party, an unbiased party, which the exact opposite, because the White Helmets basically follow al-Qaeda. They follow al-Nusra, where al-Nusra is expelled from areas of Syria. The White Helmets go with them and then pop up in the next place that al-Qaeda, Jabhat al-Nusra, or whichever name they're using.
Yes, we had this chemical weapons episode, and it was them. Then, based on what I'm reading from the UK government itself, it was them telling the UK government, oh, the Russians, or pardon me, the Syrians have used chemicals, and therefore Mr. Trump and the Prime Minister and France have to attack them.
Yeah, exactly. Well, the other thing about this statement that's revealing is that it shows how much some of the big NGO, the billion-dollar NGOs, such as Amnesty International and Human Rights Watch, how much they are aligned with the UK and US governments on this critical foreign policy issue. Now, HRW and Amnesty and Doctors Without Borders, they certainly do good work in some areas, and sometimes they challenge the government. But what we've seen in Syria and in other places, such as Libya, where what we've seen is that the big NGOs basically align with the government. Human Rights Watch has been especially called out for that in Latin America, where you had several Nobel Prize laureates calling on Human Rights Watch to stop their pipeline between that organization and the U.S. State Department. But we see that in the statement how the U.K. government is explicitly saying how they, along with Amnesty and Human Rights Watch, get their information from this organization which they funded to begin with.
Yeah, and it basically it is a way to shape narrative, right? They share a narrative, and they can, in the case of Human Rights Watch, I know, for example, in Gaza, people are noticing that Mr. Roth says, Hamas is responsible. Still, though, you shouldn't have, you had no reason to shoot these people. Well, yeah, but he put in something which hasn't been shown. And so he's helping with the narrative.
Right.
And actually, I can recall when, during the Libyan episode, the Human Rights Watch personnel were visiting the White House. You know, where meetings were being held about what to do with Gaddafi. Human Rights Watch actually participated in the meetings.
right. And actually, I mean, what they called the White Helmet. White Helmets is the brand name. The organization was created in 2012, Syria Civil Defense, and then in 2013, the young marketeers based in Brooklyn, New York, thought that they came up with a better, a slicker name for the organization, the White Helmet. And the real travesty here is that there's an authentic Syria Civil Defense that goes back to the 1950s.
Yeah, this is identity theft at one level.
Yes, it is, exactly.
It's an imposter.
And it just kind of underscores the fraudulent nature of it and the fact that it was seriously nominated and considered for a Nobel Peace Prize just a few years after it was created by a British military contractor. It shows the influence of media and, manipulation of the public information in the current era.
Yeah. Incidentally, that this document we're talking about, which will be found at Vanessa Beebe's Twitter, it says one of the reasons that they're going to continue to finance is that this has been working, that the Syria Civil Defense, slash White Helmets has been nominated for Nobel Prize.
Yeah, exactly. And I love the line where they say that the White Helmet information provided confidence to the statements of the UK and other international leaders. I really love how the U.S. and the U.K. proclaim themselves international leaders repeatedly, and as if the world is going to fall apart if everybody doesn't abide by the demands and the international leader, the Washington, D.C. And just today, actually, we've got the new Secretary of State, Mike Pompeo, giving an important talk at the Heritage Foundation, where he's issuing 12 demands to Iran, one of them being withdraw from Syria. They're standing truth on its head. Syria is a sovereign government. It's a member of the United Nations. They actually did have an election for the president in Syria. Most people aren't aware that they did have a competitive election in 2014. One can fault the election for various, one can critique it, but Lord knows we can critique U.S. elections and Canadian elections for that matter.
As a matter of fact, Americans are whining on both sides of the fence about their own elections, so why do they get excited about Syria?
Exactly. So it's as though Mike Pompeo is saying Iran has to withdraw from Syria. Well, what is the U.S. doing there? Uninvited. And they're the ones who have been playing footsie with ISIS and al-Qaeda, and it's the al-Qaeda organization that is closely connected with the White Helmets. In fact, the leader of al-Qaeda, the official al-Qaeda, said that he issued a statement of praise for the White Helmets, who there are their brothers in arms without, claiming they're without guns. Of course, we know from photographs and video that sometimes they do carry guns, and some of the al-Qaeda fighters.
And they practice partisan politics, which, aid organizations don't do that. They do sometimes comment on one problem, but they actually ask for the removal of the president of Syria and intervention by great powers.
Right. And another thing, going back a few years, Phil, is that the leader of al-Qaeda, one thing we know is that U.S. foreign policy, they always have to have a foreign person who they will put forward, and they'll put opinion pieces in the Washington Post and other influential newspapers. These opinion pieces typically are not written by the individuals involved. Mm-hmm. They're written by marketing companies. So you had Raad Saleh, who does not speak English, who is the official head of the White Helmets, in Washington, D.C. This is in 2014. A very prominent op-ed in the Washington Post calling for Western direct intervention in Syria. But it just the fact that, number one, they can get on the op-ed pages of the Washington Post. Number two, the fact the statement is not even written by the people. It's written by a marketing company. It just shows how the public is being manipulated by government, by powerful forces that want to convince us of one thing, whether or not it's true.
Yeah. I'm going to ask you about another matter, but before we move from this document, I got to ask you about this strangulated but really fascinating language of the document. It says that we're going to continue to provide money, training, equipment, basically, and support into helping them to strengthen, this is a quote, strengthen their relationship with governance actors.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought, well, actors seems to be the right word. What the heck are they talking about? Aren't they talking about those councils they tried to form where the British government was providing money to alternate governments?
That's it. Sometimes they call it civil society, and sometimes there's
governance actors. I love that.
Yeah, exactly. Sometimes there's authentic civil society and authentic grassroots organizations, and then there's the AstroTurf, the foreign-funded civil society, which are basically just arms of the U.S. that are being set up for various reasons to undermine the government as part of the overall regime change strategy.
Mm-hmm. We're speaking to Rick Sterling. You find his articles, Consortium News and elsewhere. Just write Rick Sterling. You find all the good articles. And, Rick, we had just before this Jerusalem business and all the massacre of Gaza, et cetera, there was a sharp exchange between Syrian forces, forces in Syria, and Israel. And the story here became immediately, well, it became the Israeli version of the story. And Israel said, Iranians are shooting at us. And the Iranian government, as far as I know, said, we didn't shoot at you. If we did, we'd let you know. But it's become a story. Israel now wants to pretend it's fighting Iran. What do you know about that? Can you talk about what your take on that, on the exchange of missiles?
Well, Israel has been involved in the conflict in Syria from the get-go. There was a lot of, you know, faulty analysis initially that Israel was content with the Assad government and that they weren't involved in supporting the armed opposition. But in reality, they have been involved from the get-go. They've even treated terrorist fighters in hospitals in the Golan, and they've attacked the Syrian military forces many times during the conflict. But in the last, especially in the last year, they've been underscoring that they want to portray their intervention in Israel as an intervention against Iran. Mm-hmm. So to try to justify their involvement there as though their attack in Syria isn't an attack on Syria, it's an attack on Iran, which is, you know, 1,500 miles away.
Mm-hmm.
Iran does have some forces there. It's always been exaggerated how many forces there and how influential they are, but Iran is involved in there. I mean, it was Ariel Sharon who said that the day after the U.S. finished with Iraq, they should go after Iran.
Mm-hmm.
And as we know, Benjamin Netanyahu's been after Iran for almost decades now, and he's the one who said that when you overthrow Saddam Hussein, you know, the whole Middle East is going to be a better place. And mm-hmm. we know how false that prediction was.
Mm-hmm.
But they're basically, the Israel is trying to portray their illegal intervention, their attacks on Syrian sovereignty as attacks on Iran, when it's basically an attack on the sovereignty of Syria. And it was not, they've said that the missiles that were fired into the Israeli occupied Golan is coming from Iranians, but the reports that I've seen, the credible reports I've seen, indicate that it was Syrians that were sending a message saying, you've attacked us for the last several years and we have not responded, and the time has come where we're going to start responding to your attack.
Yes.
It was drawing a line in the sand.
Yeah.
And it's significant that Avigdor Lieberman and other Israeli leaders kind of quickly backtracked. They said, okay, well, we've done this. We did this attack, and we want to get that behind us. We want to end that. So I think the message has been sent from Syria to mm-hmm. Israel, saying that they may come under a much stronger missile attack from Syria if Israel continues to attack in Syria, which mm-hmm. realistically it's I think one would have to predict that that's going to happen as the Syrian government moves to retake the area near the Golan Heights, the Israeli occupied Golan Heights, and the Jordanian border area around Daraa. As the Syrian government advances there and expels the terrorists, which is happening right now, it's going to be a dangerous situation, and we're going to have to see whether Israel increases its attacks in Syria, because that may lead, and that likely will lead, to more Syrian attacks against Israel.
Which is why they would like to frame this as though they are opposing or dealing with Iran, because
exactly.
If you say Iran, of course, Iran has no claim on the Golan Heights. However, if you get into an armed fight with Syria, the Golan Heights belong to Syria.
Yeah, that's right.
And the U.S. Congress cannot change that.
Right.
This is an internationally recognized. So rather than be sort of wrong-footed by Syria in a conflict where they definitely would be in the wrong as occupiers, They would prefer to say, oh, we're fighting Iran.
Exactly, exactly. And, I mean, Iran is, for the reasons I was mentioning earlier, Iran knows that if Syria falls, if the Syrian government was to collapse and be taken, or either to break up into basically a failed state, as we see in Libya, Iran knows that it would be next on the hit list.
Well, they've been told that. Everything. Whenever I read the right-wing commentators, they take it as though they're on a long parade to get to Tehran.
Exactly. I mean, Wesley Clark talked about this over 10 years ago.
Yeah. This is Rick Sterling. And, Rick, I have to ask you, this is pretty dramatic development. The Palestinian refugee camp, I guess that's appropriate language, of Yarmouk has been liberated by the Syrian army, together with, correct me if I'm wrong, or tell me about it, the Palestinian armed Palestinian element.
Mm-hmm. Yes, that is correct. I haven't seen the final confirmation, but I've seen a lot of reports pointing in that direction that Al Qaeda and ISIS fighters were being removed in the green buses, the famous green buses,
yes,
from Yarmouk. And if that is true, if those reports are confirmed, that'll be very good news, because this has been an area that's been controlled by jihadis and then by actual ISIS, mm-hmm, terrorists for the last several years. It's basically a part of Damascus, and it's a refugee camp in the sense that it's populated by official Palestinian refugees, but those Palestinians have all the rights of Syrians within Syria, but they retain their Palestinian citizenship, not Syrian citizenship, and they when I visited the area and I visited with Palestinians who were from Yarmouk, and they were living in either an UNRWA school area or a Syrian school area, they were talking about how they needed to get the terrorists out of Yarmouk so they could go back there, and they say, and after that, we need to go home to Palestine.
And there is some, go ahead. Yeah, and it's. I was impressed that they're part of this fight.
Exactly.
A number of groups.
Yes. Yeah. The Palestinians also in Aleppo. The Palestinian district of Aleppo was. It was the Palestinian militias that led the fight there, and they've done the same thing in Yarmouk. So this is really good news, and that's why the Syrian army and their militia allies are moving towards Daraa and up near the border with Jordan. They're little by little they're expelling the terrorists and allowing for the return of civilians and allow for the start of reconstruction in these areas.
Mm-hmm. Again, it's Rick Sterling, and I know Rick, you have some impressions or thought about this the Venezuelan election. Its significance. How do you view if Venezuela's been a good friend, by the way, of Syria?
Venezuela has, and I mean, one thing they have in common, of course, is that Venezuela has been a target of Washington. Washington and the U.S. media applauded and supported the coup, the 2002, the short-lived 2002 coup in Venezuela. And they've been applying sanctions. They've been putting a lot of pressure, supporting opposition groups in Venezuela. And it's kind of impressive. It's very impressive, actually, to see a solid bloc, a solid majority of Venezuelans coming out, continuing to support their independence there. The results are that slightly less than 50% voted in the election. Well, that's about the same amount as vote in the U.S., so mm-hmm. we can say that that's not very satisfactory, but conditions are bad there. They've been strangled economically. The oil prices have been very low. That's, of course, their mm-hmm. big commodity. But they have persisted, and Maduro won 68% of the vote, with a real opposition from Henri Falcon, who was a governor of a state and a former Chavista himself. But he proposes dollarizing the economy, which would basically turn it over to Washington totally. That would be a disaster. I think most of the people in Venezuela realize this, as difficult as the conditions are now, they would just get worse if the Washington compliant opposition took over there. So they're continuing to stand strong, and we're going to see reports coming out in the coming week from a number of commentators who are there. Dan Kovalik's there. Interestingly enough, Manuel Zelaya, the former president of Honduras, who was overthrown in the coup, he's there. Rafael Correa from Ecuador, the former president of Ecuador, is in Venezuela. They've all been observing the election and talking with people. So we're going to hear some really interesting reports coming back in the days ahead of what transpired. The reports I got last night, I got a call from a friend who was in Caracas observing the situation, is that everything was calm. The elections were proceeding normally. And then at that time, he didn't hear the results, but the results came out later on, 68% Maduro. And I've been an observer at an election in Venezuela in December 2015. Their election process puts to shame the U.S. process. They have verification. They have a paper receipt ballot that's turned in, so you can do cross-checking between the electronic tabulation and the paper form. You can do a real legitimate verification of the vote. And Jimmy Carter, of course, years ago said of all the elections they observed, the very best was in Venezuela.
Yeah, you'd be happy to know, you do know that the Canada has already announced that they, as part of the Lima group, they reject the outcome.
Right.
Something to
well, what can we say?
why don't they say we're ashamed to be members of the Lima group? That would be something. That'd be helpful.
Right. Yeah, well, you know, meanwhile, Honduras had what even the OAS was a fraudulent election last December, and the results weren't announced until January, and yet the U.S. Rushed to recognize that. I don't know if Canada held back at all on that or not.
I do not think so.
Yeah. It's really sad.
They do understand American politics here. If you want to get along, you better go alone.
Right. Yep.
Rick Sterling, it's a pleasure talking to you. It's a lot of information, and we really value it, and we appreciate your writing. Thank you very, very much.
Okay, thanks, Phil. Good to be with you.
Okay, doke. Rick Sterling.
Bye-bye.
This is CIUT. It's a Taylor Report, and just to tell you, I don't know if I have. I have been asked about Larry Krotz's book. He was on the show last week, and it's called "Diagnosing the Legacy." Diagnosing the Legacy. People have asked me about the title. University of Manitoba Press. This matter of diabetes 2 is something everybody ought to think about, particularly as it strikes the indigenous population. It's a very serious threat. Again, it's Phil Taylor for the Taylor Report. I want to thank Febby, and we'll see you next week.